What's up, Bandheads? Thank y'all for riding with me for 3 seasons. This is our season finale, and I plan to be back sometime in 2023 with more interviews and more talk with band folks and finding out what makes them tick. I want to also thank you for supporting the podcast, listening, providing feedback, all that good stuff. And so today is a special episode, being that it's dropping on the 20th anniversary to the day, 20th anniversary that the movie Drumline came out in theaters. I can't believe it's been 20 years. I can talk about it all day. I had to have somebody to talk about this with. And so I brought 3 of my people that have previously been on the podcast, but were in unique situations. I have my partner, Mike, with me, my partner with the Fifth Quarter, Mike Lee. I have Warren Shaw, who is a ranger for Clark Atlanta University. And I have my boy, Jeff Thompson, who, if you know the movie Drumline, you know he is the big white guy with the tuba. These are my people, and I had to have them on to just kind of reminisce and really kind of educate the Bandhead community what went down when the movie actually came out. So I hope you all enjoy. Have a great holiday season. Have a great 2023. Here is our Drumline retrospective. All right, everybody, I'm so excited about this conversation that we are going to have. So I have 3 people who have been on the podcast previously as individual contributors. I have with me my partner, Mike Lee. Mike and I, we started the Fifth Quarter together all those years ago, and that's family right there. I also have my friend, Warren Shaw. Warren Shaw marched for Alabama State. And let me go back. So I have a little bit of a rivalry here because I have Mike Lee, who marched for Alabama A&M. We've got Warren, who marched for Alabama State. And yeah, so you all can't see this, but Mike he's wearing an MMW shirt. And so, yeah, Warren, he is the assistant director. Are you assistant, associate? Okay, yeah. Assistant director of bands at Clark Atlanta currently. And then I also have my boy, Jeff Thompson. Jeff marched for Morris Brown College. He also marched for Mississippi Valley. And, you know, if you go back and listen to each of these folks' podcast individual episodes that I've done with them, you'll hear their stories. But Jeff was actually, he's known as, to me, like the white guy in Drumline. So that's
good. Yes, I'm the token white boy in this conversation.
Yes. But we love you nonetheless. Anyway, let's talk about it. I mean, it's 20 years. And when this comes out, it's going to be the actual 20 year to the day that the movie came out. So why don't you all start off with telling me what you all were doing at that time? Like, what was going on in your life? And I'm going to start off with Mike.
All right. So 20 years, man, I cannot believe that. That puts it at 2002, right? Well, let's see here. 2002, man, that was a lifetime ago. You know, me and Christy had, we were just a few years in to starting the Fifth Quarter. Everything had grown. And we started being the kind of the central hub for marching bands, right? There's a couple of different things that was happening, a couple of different sites or so forth. And really, I feel that was around the time, you know, that was like 3 years in the Fifth Quarter, like the real Fifth Quarter, that's when the words really started getting around about the Fifth Quarter. You know, like everybody was on. I think everyone was represented at that point in the lifespan of the Fifth Quarter. And so, like, we were the central hub. We were doing things like getting together with different, we were bringing people together for different events we were having, like the cruise, we were organizing cruises, we were organizing Night of the Living Bandheads, we were doing all this sort of thing. And then this movie, Drumline, rumor started circulating that they were shooting this movie. And I remember seeing stuff on the Fifth Quarter about it. We had been hearing things about it. And lo and behold, this movie came out. And, you know, if you were anyone in marching band at that time, you were at the premiere.
So, Warren, tell us where you were and what you were doing 20 years ago.
Okay, 20 years ago puts us back in 2002. That was going into my fourth year on the band staff at Clark Atlanta University. And mind you, you know, we were starting to get growing to our own with Mr. Cedric Young as director of bands, James L. Camp as assistant director, rest in peace. But, you know, we were starting to do a lot of different things. We had just really, mind you, had just shot the other band film that no one really wants to discuss.
Oh, no, we discuss it. In fact, I had Daryl on the podcast, so it's all good.
Okay, so we had filmed Pay the Price beforehand, which was maybe like about a year or so ago. And then next thing we know, we're hearing about, well, 20th Century Fox wants to film us for the movie Drumline. So we were like, oh, wow, this is going to be something that is going to be major because it's something that's finally going to shine our bands in a more positive light and show them kind of what the behind the scenes stuff, you know, what really goes on into trying to make the band.
Okay. All right. Good. And Jeff, where, tell us about where you were 20 years ago.
Let's see. 20 years ago, I had actually taken a break from Morris Brown. I had some issues. Yeah, my mom had switched jobs and I had to stop going to school and I had to get a job and do something in Atlanta, something along those lines. Anyway, I ended up, at the time that they did the movie release, I was an assistant band director at Clark Central High School in Athens, Georgia. And unfortunately, the night of the premiere, I had to be at a Christmas parade with that band. So I missed the premiere of Drumline. Okay. I missed the premiere.
Oh, man. Okay. So I know that Warren wrote some, he did some arranging that was in the movie because I remember seeing his name in the credits at the end. And of course, Jeff, we know you were in it because we physically saw you.
Yeah, you all are talking about the Pay the Price, the movie. There was a movie. There was also a movie. What was it? Take the Field. Do you guys remember that?
Oh, yeah.
I do remember that.
That was right. That was before Drumline as well, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. It's on YouTube.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. I vaguely remember Pay the Price, but I do remember the, because it, I guess maybe because it was about Alabama A&M, you know, to take the field. That was a very well-produced film as well. So all of this is building up, right? If you're looking at the overall, we're talking about Drumline. That's all building into what Drumline became, if you ask me.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I agree.
Yeah. Do you all remember? Because I mean, when I knew y'all were coming, I was like, I'm trying to remember the chronological order of things. Do you remember, like, how'd you first hear about the movie being filmed? Like, I know, Warren, you were a band director, so I'm just assuming that 20th Century Fox came to you. Jeff, how did you hear about them filming?
I heard about the filming because of Mr. Ellis. Mr. Ellis reached out to me and said that this is one of the dark sides of the film industry, but... And it may be one of the things that Kanye's talking about now. I don't know. But movie people said that they wanted more white people in the movie. So really? they wanted to diversify the look of the overall movie so that the movie could actually get more money. That's what I was told. So, of course, Mr. Ellis asked me. He asked Randy, who played trumpet, and he asked Frenchie, that played cymbals, if we would go over and be in the A&T band. Of course, I was the only one that stayed in the A&T band. Frenchie and Randy remained in Morris Brown's band for the shooting.
Okay. Can y'all talk about how they did that? Like, we've got to lay this down for people that may not know. So the Atlanta A&T band was composed of people from Southwest DeKalb High School, right? Clark, yeah. Atlanta. Was it a mix?
Yeah, it was. The original plan or the original idea was that it was going to be between Morris Brown, Southern, FAMU, and I think Graham. And none of the other bands wanted to lose to Morris Brown. And I understand that now. I didn't understand it then, but I do understand it now because that's permanent. That's, you know, they'll always think, well, this is... I think then Don Roberts made the idea of let's come up with a fictitious school, call it Atlanta A&T, and they used the Southwest DeKalb High School uniforms and just put an A&T logo over the SWD, and that was the uniforms for the A&T band. Let me clarify that. That was the uniforms for the Atlanta A&T band.
There you go.
Christy jump all the way to Houston and be like, it's Atlanta A&T, not North Carolina.
I think you know me well. So the whole thing with, because people still ask me about Atlanta A&T. No, they say, you know, is that the same school that was in Drumline? I was like, no. And even if you look closely at the uniform, you'll see that the T, so my alma mater is agricultural and technical. And on the school symbol for the movie, it says agricultural and technological, I think, or something like that.
Oh, Lord Jesus.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. I peeped it. So tell me what filming was like, Jeff.
Oh, let's see. I am the only person that got hazed on film.
Excuse
in
me?
That movie.
What do you mean?
Well, no, I wasn't the only person that got hazed on film. Dr. Lee hit me when they told us to run laps after we did when the Saints go marching in, started playing on the organ, mm-hmm. and I passed by. I'm the only one that gets hit by Dr. Lee. Anyway. Not
did
important.
That make the cutting room floor? Did that make the movie? Y'all remember that, Mike? You remember that?
Yeah. I don't remember that, but you got hazed.
You actually got to watch it. Nonetheless.
So this was when was this filming? In January 2002, right? Because I remember.
No, this was filming. This was filming in November through February. November of 2001 through February of 2002. The last, one of the last things that, if you remember, one of the articles that Charles Stone talked about was the battle that Norfolk State and Morris Brown had at Morris Brown, and Nick Cannon and Charles Stone and most of the Drumline crew was at that particular game.
So Charles Stone is the director. Now, you know, you got to say names because, you know,
Charles Stone was the director of Drumline.
Okay. So I have this poster right here. People won't be able to see it, but y'all will. So I have this poster.
Oh, yeah,
I see it.
Oh, yeah.
And it's autographed by Charles Stone. Remember, Mike, we went to New
York. I remember.
For the press junket. Yeah.
That's awesome.
So Warren, why don't you talk about like your experiences with the filming of the movie and the behind the scenes?
One of the biggest things I know, like we were definitely doing some late night filmings for this because they wanted like the night shots and whatnot to imitate that it was maybe like late summer, early fall, but we're out there freezing because like for the first game with the Wilmington game, they brought in Booker T. Washington to portray the Wilmington band. But, you know, like I said, we're just out there in the middle of the cold, just shivering, but we're trying not to make it look like that because we have to make it look like a certain scene. So it's just a lot of crazy stuff. And this was the other funny thing. And I don't know if Jeff remembers this or not. Jeff, do you remember the fact that we were filming the same night as the Royal Rumble? And
I do not remember that. That was at the Dome, wasn't it?
No, that was at Phillips Arena.
Phillips Arena.
You ended up having to give me your ticket because the filming was going all the way through the night. So I ended up going to the Royal Rumble to see the WWE match. That's when Triple H came back, so on and so forth. So it was just a lot of crazy stuff that was going on kind of behind the scenes. And then, like I said, just being able to do the whole Battle of the Bands in the Georgia Dome at the time, just because they had Clark Atlanta. Like I said, we made our scene. They actually had brought in another high school band that you have to see the actual extended director's cut to see that, but they brought in another high school band as well in the Battle of the Bands. But the only bands you get to see, of course, are Clark, Morris Brown, Grambling, and Bethune-Cookman, and of course, Atlanta A&T.
So I remember the filming of the, what is it, the classic or whatever? I forgot what it is. The Southern Classic.
The Big Southern Classic.
Big Southern Classic. I remember I did not actually go to that, even though I knew about it. I found out about it between one of y'all or on the fifth quarter. I couldn't do it because I had to apply to grad school, and I know it was the last weekend in January, and I think my application was due January 31st, so I just decided to stay. But I am kind of envious of all people who are there at the Big Southern Classic. So Jeff, tell me, and then I'm going to have Warren talk about it too, if he has any knowledge of this. So tell me about the actors, being an extra, like the behind the scenes things that people may not know.
The behind the scenes thing that people may not know is that most of the actors are just really down to earth people like we are. I mean, they have just normal everyday things like we do. It's just they make movies for a living, and that's what they do for their gigs. Very down to earth, very good people. We didn't really get to hang out with Nick much because he was the lead. Didn't really get to hang out with Zoe because she was the lead female. But everybody else, they were cool as a fan.
Mm-hmm. So what cool was Orlando Jones and Jason Weaver? I know you're still friends with Jason Weaver, right?
Yes. Yeah. Funny. Orlando is always cracking jokes, enjoys playing football, just throwing football, doing something, you know, in between take. You know, if they're setting up a scene, we'll be over on the side throwing football, you know, just talking, chopping it up, whatever. And then we're back in doing whatever they need us to do. But it was, you know, it was just a good time. And to think that you could get paid just to do that.
So y'all got paid.
Oh, of course we got paid.
You know what? I remember that. I feel like, okay, don't quote me on this, but some tells me like $100 a day or maybe $125 a day.
If we put on uniforms, we were getting paid, I think, $120 a day. And if we didn't put on uniforms, it was like $80 a day. Yeah, we got paid.
Yeah, that sounds about right. Because I know at least for the Battle of the Bands scene, it was like $80, $85 to, you know, just even if you're in the big crowd scene, you're still getting paid.
So how was that Big Southern Classic? Like, how was it that day? How was filming it? Was it an all day kind of thing? Yeah, it was.
Yes, it was fun.
It was fun. Definitely a lot of fun.
Especially once they got through filming the parts for Atlanta A&T, then the crew broke for lunch, and that's when the battle actually started. I got a chance to where the judges were sitting at during the movie. That's where I went and sat for that part of the show, and I got to watch all the bands perform at that place. It was a real nice viewpoint.
Okay. So how about you, Warren? How was that for you?
Yeah, that was definitely an experience. Definitely some long days, but we really enjoyed ourselves as far as the filming and just being able to interact with some of the different people. Because like I said, just a lot of people that I got a chance to meet, fraternity brothers and sorority sisters from the other bands, so on and so forth. We just had a good chance to fellowship, have a really good time. And like Jeff was saying, acting was cool because especially Jason Weaver, you know, with him becoming Kappa Kappa Psi in the movie, we actually made him honorary at Clark Atlanta.
Yeah.
Okay. So he's a Kappa Kappa Psi for real.
For real.
Okay. That's good to hear. So, Warren, what songs did you arrange that ended up being in the movie?
Unfortunately, what I did arrange got cut out from the movie, and I kind of hate that, but it is what it is, because we had done an arrangement of Rollout by Ludacris that just ended up on the cutting room floor. So what you heard was Halftime Fanfare that was arranged by Cedric Young himself. And then you heard Waiting for Tonight from Jennifer Lopez that was actually arranged by our student arranger at the time, Mr. Euless Kurtdahl.
Good. All right. So, but still your name ended up being in the credits. I saw your name in the credits. I was excited. It was so exciting to see people's names in the credits that I knew. And it was so exciting seeing them in the movie. Like I could actually point to people and say, I know this person. And mainly it was Jeff. I was like, that's my boy. So, Mike, do you remember on the 5th and the other guys, y'all might remember it too. I remember we had a choreographer, one of the assistant choreographers' sisters was a dancing doll, and she would post
She would post
pictures.
up pictures and updates about the filming of it. Yeah, I remember that.
We had whole behind the scenes photos that,
Yeah.
like, Mike, do you still have those on your machine? Do you know?
They got to be somewhere. I have them somewhere because I got a backup, constantly backed up the fifth quarter when we were building at that time, especially the images and things from the forum. Yeah, they got to be somewhere.
So I remember filming was happening, when Jeff was saying like November to February, and I guess they were doing post-production and all that stuff. And then the trailer of the movie comes out. So, you got to remember that this is before like huge social media, like what it is today. It was kind of before everybody started having smartphones like that for real.
Oh, it
You
definitely was
know?
before
It
smartphones.
was
It was
well before.
way, yeah.
it
It was
was
way
it was
before
before
smartphones.
it was before everybody started texting. I mean, it was before everything that we consider normal today. The only thing that it wasn't before are computers.
Okay. I need
It's
to
before
marinate on that a little
YouTube, it's
bit. I didn't
before
realize
Google.
that when the trailer came out, because the trailer came out with the movie Brown Sugar. Because I remember Brown Sugar was out at that time. I remember going to the movies to see Brown Sugar with Taye Diggs and Sanaa Lathan. And I go to the trailers and it's Drumline. And I am so excited. Like, I'm not even able to like concentrate on the actual Brown Sugar movie because of that. I remember another thing was that the movie was supposed to come out in January, and January is typically like a dead time for movies to come out. And I feel like that they did test screenings and it was such a high approval that they pushed the date up, they moved the date up so that the holiday season, so it could get, some steam over the holiday season. Because I also remember that it was either Hampton University, Howard University, or both got to see a test screening of Drumline. So they saw the movie before it was ever to come out to the public. And funny enough, nobody went on social media because there wasn't really any. Nobody went on there with spoilers like you think about now. Man, people running for spoilers from TV shows, the Marvel movies, or whatever. Nobody spoiled it.
Well,
Nobody spoiled it.
nobody spoiled it, but they talked about how great it was, and wait till y'all see this on the fifth quarter. They were talking about that quite a bit. So they didn't spoil it. They didn't say what was going to happen. They didn't say the storyline, anything like that. But again, when you do those kind of test screenings and so forth, you have to sign, you usually have to sign something that you're not going to kind of
Like a
discuss it.
non-disclosure
Yeah,
or something along
non-disclosure kind of
those
thing.
lines.
Yeah, but you can definitely say, I saw it and how great it was. Wait till y'all see it. And that's exactly what people did.
Before we get into like when the movie came out, what was y'all's favorite? And I guess this is more for Jeff and Warren. What was y'all's favorite part of filming, or what was your favorite thing about filming?
The morning that Morris Brown, that we filmed the game against Morris Brown, there was some discord and some in the A&T band, and I'm a true Wolverine. I was happy about it, and
You got to give details on that. What do you mean by Discord?
I don't remember. I don't remember. I just remember that they had split up A&T band with there was a rift between the college band members and the high school band members, and they had them split up. So they had Clark on one side and Southwest on another side. And I wasn't technically either one, so I just stood up at the top in the middle, and all I hear is this roar come across the street, and it ain't nothing but just heat. And Morris Brown's just over there just lighting up the stadium. Just
Okay, you
lighting
got
up.
to say what lighten up is now, because these are for
They
people.
blow it. And it's like at that time it was 7 or 8 o'clock in the morning, because the way the way that they shot that scene is Morris Brown was shot first thing in the morning because the sun comes up and they have the sun, they use the sun to shoot Morris Brown's side. So once they shot Morris Brown, they took a break and then they waited for the sun to get it on the west side so that they could shoot A&T side. So we weren't in the stands at the same time. The same fans that were on Morris Brown's side in that scene were on A&T side in that scene.
Mm-hmm.
So it was just the fact of just being there and hearing that and knowing that the reason you're hearing a pep talk for you to go and do something that you can't do. You're going to go and do something a fake group is going to be able to do to a band that's been doing this all year long.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But I mean, what was happening was there was a pep talk taking place at the time in Clark Stadium, and Morris Brown is just over there just letting it go. It's just ain't nothing but heat coming out that, and it's just letting it just go. And I'm just smiling. I'm just up there smiling. I look at Chubby because Chubby's on the drum line, and he just looks at me and he just smiles. Chubby got one gold tooth, and you just see that gold tooth smiling.
See, you petty.
Yes.
So, Warren, tell me about what your favorite part of filming or maybe like your favorite behind-the-scenes moment was.
Yeah, this is going to take some thought because, like I said, we had a lot of good times. And I guess just probably the overall, just like I said, you've got the battle that you saw on screen, and then you had the battle for real at the Georgia Dome. It was getting stupid.
Let's talk about it. What I mean, because this is what the people want to know. They want to know the behind the scenes stuff.
Like I said, you know, Grambling, this wasn't necessarily the Grambling that they are now, but they still was bringing some nice little heat, you know. And then, you know, with Morris Brown and Clark already being rivals, we're always going back and forth with one another. So, like I said, just being able to just kind of blow back and forth in the Georgia Dome as a whole, just letting off some steam, just having a good time. But like I said, just overall, the whole Battle of the Bands experience was great to me. The only thing I probably wouldn't have, which I'm glad I didn't have to stay for, was the whole face-to-face drumline battle at the end, because they said they were there for about another 8 hours after that. I was like, y'all got it.
Yeah, the drumline battle took place overnight. They left at 5 o'clock that next morning.
So the movie's coming out and everybody's excited about it. Like once it dropped, you know, everybody was getting excited. And then Mike, do you remember when we got invited to the premiere, or no, the press junket? We got invited to the press junket. Do you remember the specifics behind that?
Yeah. So what happened was, before the premiere came out, you know, we got notified about that because we later found out that the actors were using the fifth quarter for research, right? For research and band culture and so forth. And I think I was contacted. I can't remember which one of us were contacted. We were asked if we'd be interested in coming to New York to interview the cast. And of course, I was like, yeah, of course we'd come up there. And I remember telling you, and we were like, okay, so we're going to be down in Atlanta. We'll fly down, you know, we'll fly from Atlanta up to New York, and then you fly back to Virginia, I think, and then I flew back to.
It was a little later.
Something like that, yeah.
Yeah, because so, the press junket was on a Sunday, and right. Then the premiere, the world premiere was that Wednesday.
Right.
Tuesday.
Right.
Thursday,
yeah.
It was on a Thursday because it came out on Friday. I was in the theaters that Friday morning.
Okay. Yeah, but I knew that like the press junket was ahead, like it was that Sunday before. So y'all didn't know, but that was my very first time going to New York. Mike knew.
Yeah. Yeah. And that was a whirlwind too.
You know, we, Mike and I mean, at that time, I'm teaching at Norfolk State on an adjunct salary. So money was tight. But I was like, you know what? I'm going to go because YOLO. Like, when is the next time that 20th Century Fox is going to invite us to a press junket? When is the next time that we're going to a movie premiere, like the actual red carpet event? Like, never. So I scraped up some coins together, probably maxed out a credit card, knowing me. I was also in grad school at the time. So between that and my adjunct salary, I was struggling. And we ended up getting there. Mike and I ended up going there. So, Mike, I was so glad because I was living in Virginia. Mike was living in North Carolina, but now we live in the same city. But we weren't then. And we get on our respective planes and we meet in New York. And I don't even remember how we did it. I think we had cell phones then. I don't know.
You did.
Yeah, we had cell phones.
Okay.
We had cell phones. I had a Nextel, as a matter of fact.
Okay,
Had a
well we got
Sprint.
well we got connected together and then we were supposed to go. Come on, Mike, let's recap this. We went to this hotel.
Went to this hotel and they had the rooms split up. It was like, there were certain types of media could go in certain kind of rooms, and then the actors would come in. And so the one we were placed in was just audio. It was audio interview, but we had a camera. So Christy had a camera, and we were like, man, what are we going to do? So we were like, okay, look, we're just going to record this. We're not going to shoot video of this. We'll just record. And they said, okay, that's cool. And so we were in there with the press, man. We were asking questions. And Christy was asking about the fifth quarter. Like, oh, snap, you guys are the fifth quarter. We were on there every day. We were trying to understand. We were researching. We were looking at the post. Someone said that they had posted. I just remember sitting next to Zoe Saldana, and I was just like, it was hard for me to talk. I remember being nervous. I was looking at, I don't remember seeing anybody else but her. I actually just recently told my kids about interviewing her up there because, she's in Marvel now and everything. But man, it was like we were right there with these actors, right? And then Orlando Jones, how did we get him saying, talking about the fifth quarter? Because we actually got him on video in the hallway talking about the fifth quarter.
Okay, so you thought you were nervous. I was the one that was nervous. So I remember sitting by you because it was one of those hotel tables, you know, the round circle, the circle ones that seat like eight people or whatever. So we're sitting there and it's me and Mike and then like maybe five other press people. And then I remember I guess Fox representative person was like, okay, we're gonna bring each person in. And they did like a round robin. So they like rotated tables after a bit. And the people that came in were Nick Cannon, Zoe Saldana, and Orlando Jones and Charles Stone, the director. And I was so nervous. And I remember sitting there looking at you, Mike, like, what do I say? Kind of like I was starstruck. I was nervous, but then like when I think the first person might have been Nick Cannon that came to our table.
Right,
And
I think so.
he was just really cool. I mean, you know, we know he got 1,000 kids now, but I mean, he was still pretty cool. And
Maybe they'll all be on the drum line.
yeah, I know. He birthing a whole entire drum line.
He might be working on a band.
Yeah, exactly.
He got enough of them. He can
Yep.
represent each se section.
Yep. But he was really cool. And like I remember there was this man that was sitting with us and he was asking, like, he was trying to be petty with the questions. Like, I'm thinking, did you work for a tabloid? Because I remember they were pressing Zoe Saldana to talk about her boyfriend. Do you remember that, Mike?
I do remember that. And we were just trying to talk about the movie. So
Right.
like remember, like these are professional press folks. So they're moving past. They're talking about what projects they're working on now, and they're talking about like what's next, all this kind of thing, what's in the news. We're just talking about like, do you know the fifth quarter? Like, what was it like filming it? Do you have a different respect for marching bands and stuff like that? We were asking those kind of questions. We were talking like the culture kind of stuff. So it was really an eye-opening experience to kind of see. It was madness, and there was a lot of stuff happening, a lot of people moving around. The handlers were coming in, say, all right, you're done. Okay, we're good. We got to move over here. You move over here, that kind of thing. it was like madness, but it was one of the best experiences that me and Christy had. We were just like, even going back to the airport, we couldn't stop smiling. It was just like this big excitement kind of thing. It was, it was great.
It just brought back warm and fuzzy memories. I remember looking at you, Mike, and like, I can't believe we just did this. I can't
I
believe
know.
we did this.
I kept saying that for a month,
And
when we
like,
posted the clips and stuff like that on the fifth quarter, like I still couldn't believe
and
that
you
we had
know,
done that.
speaking of Orlando Jones, so like he, I don't know how that happened. I thought you asked him to stay back or something, or we were walking in the hall and you asked him,
I was like,
could you film something?
well, so he was the one that was really talking about the fifth quarter. Orlando Jones was. And so when we were leaving, like at the very end, we were all leaving out. And I was like, we appreciate you looking at the fifth quarter. Can you say something for us about the fifth quarter? Let the audience, let our fifth quarter crew know. And he was like, you want to film this? And Chrissy had the camera. She was like, all right, let's go. And that's when he said that. I remember that. We couldn't get anybody else to say anything, but he sure did. Orlando Jones did.
And we took pictures with him. And for the ladies listening, he smells really good. I will never
That's
forget how good he smelled. He was
funny.
such a southern gentleman, such a southern gentleman, such a class act. Gave me a kiss on the cheek. My day was made. So anyway, we head back and oh, another thing before I do that, I remember us talking to Charles Stone. And he was really friendly too. And he signed. So we ended up getting like, how many posters, Mike? Do you remember us taking back a whole big
Man, we
thing of
had a bunch of
posters?
posters. Charles Stone, he gave us a bunch of posters.
And he signed
Yeah.
some of
He
them,
signed them. Yep,
including
he
the one
sure
that I
did.
have. And I remember him telling me this. He said, don't go selling this on eBay. I remember he said that.
Yeah, he did. He did say that. I do remember that.
Yep,
Yes.
yep. So we get back home and we're like, in our respective homes, and we're like in disbelief because I think a few days later we fly. Well, I don't know if you, I think you drove, Mike, because you were living closer, but I flew to Atlanta to the premiere. Now, let's talk about that. 20th Century Fox, did they do this at the press junket, Mike? Did they give us 10 VIP passes? Who gave us? I can't remember.
I think it was at the I think it was at the press thing. I do think they gave us those passes. That's right. I do remember that.
So I
And
remember. Yeah,
it was
go.
a snowing weekend up. Was that?
It was
Did
snow
it
for
snow up
me.
here?
It was
It was snow
snow for
for you.
me, but it was not snow in North Carolina. It was snow in Virginia because I got a story about that. So
Yeah, okay.
we get these 10 free passes, VIP passes to the premiere, and they're like, well, just as long as you can get down here, then you can get them. And I remember us, we actually got those a little bit in advance because I remember us holding a contest on the fifth quarter. We drew names and we mailed some of those passes to people, not
Yes.
all of them. I think we
That's right.
asked, okay,
Yeah.
who in Atlanta is gonna be like amongst our friend group? Who's gonna go
Wait,
to
wait.
Atlanta?
I think the was the press thing was after the premiere, right?
No, it was before.
Before? Okay. So yeah, they must have gave it to us then, because we were able to get people those passes before we had like a little raffle thing kind of thing we
Yeah.
came right.
Yeah, it the timeline's kind of fuzzy.
Yeah.
And I remember asking my friend Tori, who I marched with at A&T, and then Art, who, and both of them, well, Art was living in Atlanta, and Tori said he was going to drive down to it. And I gave them two passes because we ended up hanging together. So what happened was, okay, we're going to get to the day of premiere. The reason why I say it was snowing, because it was snowing in Norfolk. I was teaching at Norfolk State. I canceled my class for that day. I said, I'm gonna go and get on my plane. I got my plane ticket. The flight was delayed because of the weather. And I ended up getting to the event just in time for the movie to start. And I remember Art and Tori picked me up from the airport because, like, by that time, the weather in Georgia, like, wasn't affected or whatever. And I remember they took me to the premiere. We were just in time and we were like dressed semi-formal. I remember that. What do you remember, Mike?
I just remember like we went down there and I don't remember much from what happened beforehand, but get into the theater. I remember there was like a bunch of people trying to get in, a bunch of people, and we went in a different way. And as I was going in, if you guys know Ruben Studdard, you know, he went to A&M and we were friends. We were friends, me and him and my ex-wife. They went to the church, the same church together. He sung at the wedding and everything. And as we were going in, he was like on the other side of this gate where everybody else was going in. And you know, we said hi to him and everything. He was coming to the premiere and he was saying, "Y'all pray for me. I'm about to do this thing, American Idol. You know, you guys pray for me. I hope, you know, we'll, oh man, we'll definitely cheer for you. We heard about that. We'll watch it and stuff like that." And so we went in and it was absolutely bananas. I just remember sitting amongst everyone and just hearing people reacting. And I was like, I'm gonna have to watch this again because people are cheering so loud, people are laughing, people are, you know, all this kind of thing. But it was just the environment was so electric. I remember, you know, just looking around and then taking it all in. Like everybody's here, like all these bands are represented. Everybody's getting to experience this, and it was just really exciting. I just remember it being it was a really exciting weekend for marching bands, I think.
I feel like Morris Brown's band was actually there. Maybe it was Southwest DeKalb's band was actually in there because of the end when the end credits, when Morris Brown does that uh-oh thing, then like I just remember the entire theater, box theater, everybody was like, uh-oh. Do you remember that, Mike?
Everybody was there.
Yes, I do remember that. Yep. Yeah.
So anyway, the movie comes out. And tell me, Warren, what's going on with you when the actual movie comes out? Or if you want to talk about the premiere, were you at the premiere?
Actually, yes, I was at the premiere and I still have my VIP
Ah, oh, there it is. I have mine too. It's somewhere
pass.
in the closet. But yeah.
But yeah, we were at the Atlanta Civic Center. It was on one side you had Morris Brown, on the other side you had Clark, continuing the rivalry. But then you also had Southwest DeKalb, Redan High School, Mays High School, Frederick Douglass, and you had like several high schools that were invited to do a quick little like jamboree before the actual movie premiere itself. That in itself, like I said, that was very exciting. And then you had Dallas Austin up on one of the lifts when everybody came together and played Been Away. That was it. Been Away. That song. Everybody had came together. All of the bands had learned that that was a Kelly Fanning arrangement. So Kelly Fanning was assistant director and chief arranger for Morris Brown College. So we got a chance to play that. And it was really massive. But then, like I said, just getting in to go see the actual movie in the Civic Center. Just imagine seeing over 1,500 band heads in uniform just watching a movie. It was just that's still one of my most favorite awesome moments as far as being on staff at Clark Atlanta, was just doing that premiere.
Yeah, that's awesome. That's awesome. So I have a question for all three of you. Not counting the premiere to those who went to the premiere, how many times have you seen Drumline in the theater? How many times did you see it in the theater when it came out?
Three. I saw it three times.
I think I saw it twice.
Okay.
I think
In the theater.
it was twice for me. Like I said, we saw the premiere Thursday. Then I turned around, went and saw it Friday.
Okay.
And then at least one other time after that.
I went Friday morning to see it by myself so that I could just watch it and take it all in. And then I went another time with some friends, ended up seeing a few guys from the Senate, the drum line. They were actually able to keep their jackets that had the Senate on it. And the last time that I went and saw it, I went with a few of my people I went to high school with.
Okay. I saw it once. Oh, we actually had like a viewing party in Norfolk. It wasn't a viewing party where the fifth quarter like reserved a room. It was more of like I remember going on the fifth quarter and saying, because you remember they organized like viewing parties Like every meaning everybody go to the movie at this location at this time and we all meet. So I remember for Hampton Roads, we went to MacArthur Center Mall. I knew it was like a 7 o'clock viewing and I went online and I said, look, here's the time, here's the theater, everybody, all the band heads that live in the 757, buy your ticket for that. And like by 4 o'clock that afternoon, that Friday afternoon, it had sold out. That showing had sold out. I went to the theater. I went with my friend, now SAI sister Sonia. We sat together and it was just full of like band heads from different programs. I mean, Virginia State folks there, Hampton folks there, Norfolk State folks there, like just different people that happened to be in the 757. Everybody had on like HBCU shirts. Some people had on their band shirts. Everybody was like laughing, talking, making noise, which I was like, okay, I know what's coming. Of course, I didn't spoil it for anybody. And then I remember the let out. Like it was actually felt like the club. Like it was like a let out where I got to see so many people that I knew that had marched in these different programs were at that premiere in Hampton Roads. So that was a fun time. And then I think I saw it once by myself to, you know, so I could take it in like Jeff did. And then I think by that, the next time I saw it, I was home for Christmas in Virginia and I saw it with my parents. No, I think my parents might have seen it before as well. I think they saw it twice in the theater. But anyway, yeah. How about you, Mike?
So obviously we saw the premiere, but I saw it in the theater because remember, I told you it was so loud in there. It was so raw. So I was like, I got to go back and I got to go see it. And it was just a few of us here in North Carolina. We decided to go see it. But then I wouldn't go watch it. I went to watch it by myself, you know, because, you know, it's just sometimes you want to be with the movie, right? You just want to, you want to by yourself, you want to take it in. You have to rewatch things to see things a little bit differently. And then when people saying, yeah, did you see that? Did you see that? And so, like, it was a really important movie to me, right? That Drumline was a really, really important movie to me because, you know, at that time I finished marching in 97. And so that was about 5 years afterwards. And, you know, you all know this, everybody in marching band feels this at some point, it's a disconnection, right, that we experience when you leave marching band. And so this was almost like an immersion back into marching band and some of the things that we experienced. Now, obviously, we could get into what was real, what was not, what the impact of the different storylines and the Hollywood and up HBCU marching bands. But this was a connection that a lot of people who was no longer marching was experiencing. And so I needed to watch that. I needed to feel that, you know, feel the, you know, when they were, you know, they were kind of squat down against the wall, holding their drumsticks out like that, right? In the rain, you know, he had to feel that. You had to kind of feel the little bit of hazing that was going on there. You had to feel the tension, you know, the experience of the dancing girls, the tension between the different sections and all that kind of thing. That's something that you miss. And so, like, you know, sometimes you just had to be with that, you know, on your own. And that's what I felt like I had to do. So that third time that I watched it, if you include the premiere, was really for me to feel that, you know, have my own space to feel it.
Mm-hmm. Okay, understood. Jeff, were you getting stopped on the street?
Was I getting stopped on the street?
Yeah, like
not necessarily stopped on the street. I will tell you that at the Honda Battle of the Bands, I was getting these questions. I could hear people in the stands talk about, is that the guy from Drumline? I'm like, and I just look up. I say, yeah, it's me.
What a superstar, I tell you.
And it's you know, it's nice to be noticed like that, but it's more kind of humbling too, because you of all the people that could have gotten to do it, I got to. Mm-hmm. And, you know, there are definitely those drawbacks, like Mike said, you know, the Hollywood HBCU band experience and the real band experience. But I definitely look at the opportunity to be in the movie Drumline was definitely one of the best experiences I've had in life. And it expanded the number of people that I know in band and you know, even in movies.
Right.
So I have nothing negative to say about the overall experience. The only thing that I could say negative about it is something that had absolutely nothing to do with the movie, but it had something to do with Morris Brown, and it just happened to be at the time that Morris Brown was going through its accreditation issues. So, you know, being in the auditorium and having people from Clark and Morehouse, and Jaylen Brown says that, you know, we got some scholarship money for you, and our people will always harp on us the most. They will joke on us the most and the hardest. And we just got to take it with a grain of salt. It is what it is. That was a rough time to hear that, because at that time, there were 400 applications in the admissions office when we got back from Christmas break in 2003 in the band, and from the band room. Every band phone answering service was full. Mm-hmm. We want to be in your band. I mean, you're talking about thousands of people that want to be in the band, set up, literally set up. And, you know, it just, our demise happened at a really bad time when we were set up to be, but we were set up to be so much better than what we were.
Wow. Yeah. Well, luckily Morris Brown is definitely getting back right on yes. track.
And thankfully it's being done by a band head.
Yes, exactly. Shout out to KJ. So Warren, talk to me about what you think, you know, as a band director, as a HBCU band director, what do you think the effect of Drumline was? I mean, now that I think about it, it's been 20 years. So like there are students in band programs now that weren't even alive when Drumline came out. But let's talk about, let's say, the first 5 to 10 years or so. What do you think the impact was?
One of the biggest things was you started to see an influx of students that wanted to start picking up musical instruments. A lot of them did want to pick up percussion, but at the same time, we had a lot of students that were starting to pick up instruments on that secondary level, middle school, high school. We started seeing big booms in a lot of those programs at the time. So you started seeing like the Southwest Cav having 350 students. We had Stevenson that had 300 students. But you had a lot of wide-ranging interest of wanting to be in the band. And, you know, we do have Drumline to thank for that as far as just being able to put band on a big screen. But, you know, also at the same time, like I said, you know, they thought, you know, like I said, the Hollywood version of HBCU band versus the real HBCU band. Like I said, you could definitely tell that some people came in there thinking, you know, this is Hollywood and it's not how it works. So, you know, like I said, there was definitely a lot of good that came out of it as far as, you know, building musicians and building band programs. But like I said, just sometimes you think they came in there at the with the wrong mindset.
Right. Right. Well, I remember, and I don't know if Mike remembers this too. I'm going to assume we all do. It seemed like in the years after Drumline, everybody's, you know, mom and pop's laundromat and chop shop was throwing about a little bit. Warren is just cracking
they
up.
They still over. Are. They still are.
That part.
But it was more prevalent then, don't you think?
I do agree.
Oh, I still think it still is.
Why do you think it still is, Jeff?
Cracker Barrel is the biggest battle of the bands right now. Think about that for a second. Cracker Barrel. Cracker Barrel. When the barrel of my people throws the biggest battle of the band for HBCUs, you know, something just has to be, something's got to be wrong in the water. I'm just saying.
I love you, Jeff.
I love you too.
Yes, Mike. What do you think, what kind of things did you notice as the impact of Drumline being like, let's say those first 5 years or so?
So I may be a little controversial on this one here. So I think Drumline ushered in a time of unrealistic expectations of HBCU marching bands. I think, so when I was in high school or earlier in high school, A Different World was out, the show A Different World. And so I had this expectation of what an HBCU experience was based on a different world. And Hollywood has a way of doing that. And so I feel, you know, I think Drumline was important for the culture of HBCU marching bands because it thrust us up in a way that people were, you know, some people knew, but some people didn't know about what HBCU marching band was about. Just like Coach Prime lifted up HBCU football over the last few years, Drumline kind of lifted it up, but the expectations are a little bit different. Our facilities are not the same as, you know, some of the other types of schools. So if we're going back to Drumline, I think, you know, the experience of, you know, being able to go into an HBCU marching band without knowing how to read music, right, was just one of those things like, oh, anybody can go in there and do that, because look at what, you know, Devin Miles, that was his name, right? Look what he was able to do. The idea of a freshman coming in and challenging the section leader, the senior, whatever it is, like on the first day, just because you knew a little bit of sticking and you can, you know, roll or what, you knew your rudiments or whatever. It's just a little bit of expectation. And so, you know, when I was marching, you know, things were a little tougher on freshmen, right? Things were a little rougher. And so it felt like it ushered in a different type of freshman marching band student who felt they could come in and, you know, take over. And that, I think that caused some problems. Then you start seeing all the, I'm not saying that causation, correlation is not causation. We know that, but there was a lot more hazing reporting happening after Drumline, because I think there was a softer crowd to come in because of some of the things they thought in their mind what HBCU marching band would be like, the glory and things. You don't understand the, you know, the dirt, the crying, the soreness, the everything like that. And I just think that it may have done that. However, I don't take off the respect and the what it did for HBCU marching bands, but I just think there was some things that happened that we didn't necessarily expect.
Okay. Well, y'all, I thought this was a great discussion, and I'm so glad that we all came together to talk about our memories of Drumline, and, you know, hopefully other people will be able to reminisce and yeah. So do any of you have any parting thoughts when it comes to the movie? Anything that just sticks out? How about a favorite quote?
Really?
What's wrong with that?
It's a tuba thing, shouty.
Oh, okay. I thought it was something wrong with my question. I'm just saying.
Understood. And of course, Morris Brownman, spanking that ass.
I don't know.
You can't remember. Well, since, I know. It's been a while.
Well, since in March, hopefully I'll be defending my dissertation. I'll be Dr. Lee. I'll quote Dr. Lee with, hit him with the flight of the bumblebee.
Okay. I like that.
For me, probably, man, you're going to graduate in that white t-shirt.
I love that one. Oh, man. And you know, I asked this question, but I don't have a quote at the ready, but I really was laughing at J. Anthony Brown, and he was like, see, I had the classic. That's the one that immediately comes to my mind right now. But it's been great having y'all. I love y'all. Y'all are family.
Well, you too.
Thanks for being here. You have listened to the HBCU Band Experience with Christy Walker. Interviews and editing conducted by yours truly, Dr. Christy Walker. The music is District 4 by Kevin McLeod. And you can find this podcast on hbcubandexperience.podbean.com. You can find us on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever else you get your podcasts. Take care.